everybody. How's it going? Welcome to another edition of Voices from the Grid in Space Edition. I'm your host for this episode, Brian Massey. And joining me today is...
Hi, it's Mike.
Come on, everybody. How's it going?
I'm upright. I haven't fallen down yet.
Fantastic. All right. Anyways, sorry. Mike, thank you for joining me. Today, we are going to be talking about episode 12, 13, and 14 of In Space, The Great Evilizer, and The Beryllian Song. Are you ready to talk?
It's like how you mumbled over the second episode.
Yeah. Thoughts
and prayers for that episode.
I'm really looking forward to talking about that one.
Well, let's start with The Great Evilizer, because at least that was a pretty good, fun episode.
The summary, courtesy of Ranger Wiki, as always, thank you guys for the incredible work that y'all do, is that Professor Phenomenus invents a device that can give objects an attitude for good or for evil. There should be some more settings there, but sure, why don't we just start with those two?
If you remember seeing him, like, during the thing, he went literally from good all the way to evil. There was an in-between setting.
I guess neutral. Roll up your character for D&D.
It's a tweener.
Right? While he, Bulk, and Skull are chased around across Angel Grove by a toy car that they turned evil, Astronomus steals the device and uses it to turn the Delta Megazord against the Power Rangers, who also had to deal with Destructipede. Now,
First off, Astronomer did not steal the device. Ecliptor stole the device.
I'm going to go right into my first question for you. So, like I said, Professor Phenomenus creates this device that can give objects an attitude. The switch says good or evil. Why? Why would you do that? Also, Mike, did you have the same reaction as me when you saw that switch and said, yep, problem, set this thing to evil?
I can see him wanting it to be that way on purpose, for the sole fact that it's like, okay, we turn it evil. Let's see if we can make it work. That's number one.
Right.
Number two is, okay, now we've turned it evil. Let's make it good. Let's turn it from evil to good.
Right.
Obviously, they never did that second part.
No. To the point where they're still, at the end of the episode, spoilers, by the way, they're still being chased by the evil, like...
toy car thingy-majiggy.
With like, a silver Stretch Armstrong head plastered on top of it, I guess.
I mean, if I looked like... if I was a Stretch Armstrong turned into a POS car like that, I, too, would go evil.
Oh, yeah. man, I don't know. Why does that remind me of that episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force where Carl gets his head like plastered onto like all kinds of different things, like I think body of eyeballs and whatever. Anyways, by the way, what you mentioned too as well about how this Evilizer, obviously Ecliptor steals it, not Astronomer. I love how in Power Rangers lore, villains can steal a small device, see its potential, demand a bigger one, and by the next time you see it, which is typically in the next like scene that they're in, it's already been reverse engineered, built, painted, assembled, and ready to go, and nobody bats an eye.
They took that enlarging ray that they have to make the monsters grow, but they turned the settings a little lower so they can make the device grow.
Well, you know what? That shame on me for using logic in Power Rangers.
I just did, but you know, that's me.
Well, no, that you countered my logic with better logic, so you know, I cede to you on that. Now, second question. Very random, but if you, Mike, were on a planet whose gravity made you 100 pounds heavier, and you had the ability to be teleported up to your ship, why would you get on a board that you need to balance on and go through the stratosphere with?
Story plot logic. You gotta test the new device on something.
There you go.
Or no. Well, technically, they put the Evilizer in one of the Quantron ships because that was before they built the big one because they wanted to test it.
Right.
And so they wanted the test to make sure it would work on something of the Rangers, and then that's what led to them building the big one. So, as I said, story, plot, logic.
Yes.
Mikey makes it make sense.
Thank you, Mikey. Thank you.
I am Groot.
Question three. What were your thoughts on the ambush on the Rangers by all the Monster of the Weeks and how they decided to take care of the human-sized ones first instead of the giant monster that can arguably do more damage than 5 to 6 human-sized ones can? And then, by the way, when writing this, I completely forgot that the Delta Megazord could be controlled remotely, so keep that in mind.
So, like, I find it amazing that let's see, I actually have a note in here that despite not defeating the other monsters, they call upon the dragon, or not the dragon, the Delta Megazord to battle the one that grew. However, the Rangers decide, hey, I'm gonna stay here and keep fighting these guys. And then not pay attention to the Delta Megazord so it can actually then be evilized by Astronema at the same time. I call that a very flawed logic. Yes, it can be remote controlled by the device on Andros's wrist, but I would have preferred to like the moment you realize that like the monsters are phasing in and out and they're coming back all the time, I would automatically go, well, obviously these are fakes,
Right.
and we need to fight the real one. So I would have, probably called the Astro Megazord, and then do that battle instead. But
Right.
then story plot logic would not work if you did not get the Delta Megazord to be turned evil for a little bit.
Yeah, and as it turns out, and I'll get a little more into it. There's not much, by the way, of Mega Ranger for this one necessarily, but something something the Mega Rangers weren't able to call down the Astro Mega Zord or their version of it because it was being worked on or something, so they had to.
Listen, Billy Cranston still has to work on these ships sometimes, okay? B Billy's got a job to do. Because he's secretly in Nasada.
And which means he gets loaned out to INET in Japan, so he's also working like he's doing double duty now.
Yeah.
So
And no,
yeah.
triple duty, because he still has to go back up to Aquitar.
He's got to go back home to his wife with I don't know. It never really gets mentioned in Power Rangers that like, oh yeah, we can't really access the Astro Megazord. Call on the Delta Megazord, I guess, because it's like just shown up.
Well, I think for this one, because I think the Delta Megazord debuted the episode before this, because it's remote controlled, it's, they can focus on the one monsters while also still controlling the Delta one remotely. So it's like, I think that was just their logic on things about what they could and couldn't do at that time. I think that was their way of trying to explain why they didn't call the Astro Megazord right away.
Which is fair enough. Question four for you. For the first time in a while, we have an evil Megazord, or at least one that's been brainwashed by the main villains, which means we get a Megazord versus evil Megazord fight. The Delta Megazord seems to get the upper hand, even tricking the Rangers into letting their guard down by making them believe it's back to normal, which I thought was actually kind of cool. What did you think of this fight, and how did it measure up to other Megazord versus evil Megazord fights that we've gotten in the past?
I don't know. I didn't pay attention too much to that one.
Fair enough. I feel like out of everybody, I'm the one that's like, ooh, giant robots fighting.
I'm going to throw this out there because we are recording this on Christmas Day slash the first night of Hanukkah. And it's funny, Sasha sent me a text going, Star Wars or Transformers? And I go, for who? Because it's like, if it's for you, we could do either or. But if it's me, I would just say Star Wars because I hate Transformers. I never liked Transformers. So it's like the sword battles, it's like, yeah, you've seen one, you've seen them all.
Fair. I mean, yes, but no, but yes. I completely understand your sentiment there, but like, I'm just a big fan of like, giant robots fighting giant rubber suit monsters, but that's just me. So question five. It seems like in the time that it took for the Astro Megazord to dock with the Delta Megazord, making the Astro Delta Megazord, which by the way, going off of what you just said, I want that on my shelf. Think of the Battleizer flying power punch as a finishing move. By the way, that guitar at the end, once the fists have docked back and the monster explodes, is freaking amazing. And I cannot find it anywhere. So if anyone listening can please send that my way, you'll see my socials at the end of this. But what do you think of that finishing move?
Whatever.
I, fair enough. I was struggling to come up with questions for this episode, man. I'm sorry. Two of them were, two of them were Megazord back-to-back questions. Sorry about that.
It's an episode that existed.
Yeah. Which, yes, absolutely. It does
Like I love the concept of the Evilizer. I like how they utilize the Evilizer. The fact that they're, the Rangers are using the Astro Megazord to help counteract the Evilizer, and it results in the Evilizer up on the Dark Fortress to crap out. Great. It's a good way to like counteract it. So, yeah, it's just,
Already talked about the Sentai a little bit. I guess does this if you okay, let me ask you this. If you were trying to watch in Space abridged, would there be anything in this episode you think would be
I wouldn't
necessary?
watch anything abridged, so the answer is no.
All right.
It's like, I don't watch anything abridged. I don't care for the abridged stuff that's out there. So the answer to that would be no.
All right. Cool. All right. Well,
I
let's.
know, like every fan film service thing just was is probably gonna hate me now for saying that because I don't care about that stuff at all.
No, dude, you look, you are more than entitled to your opinion on that stuff. Like, I'm not the hugest fan of it. Like, yeah, I love DBZ Abridged, but I feel like that's a special case scenario. But like, I was just kind of asking if this episode had anything import in it that like moves the story forward or not. Because like, yeah, we got the Delta Megazord, but like that showed up last episode, and I guess this is the first time it docks with the Astro Megazord. But other than that, like, I can't really think of anything that like really pushes the story forward.
I mean, it was the whole combination of the Astro and the Delta.
Yeah.
And that was the push through because obviously you're building up to this massive thing later on.
Yeah. So there's that. Well, that's all my notes for that episode.
Now on to the most painful one of the three. I like how you're just like, do I have to?
Oh, God.
It is Grandma Matchmaker. It is the one that he mumbled beforehand.
Oh my God.
Hilariously, let me read this because the Ranger Wiki does not have the plot written down at all. All it has is a synopsis, which is essentially Ashley's grandmother visits Angel Grove, intent on seeing Ashley engaged before she leaves. We'll get to that. Luckily, Carlos helps Ashley out by pretending to be her boyfriend to help avoid the matchmaking. Kind of. Unfortunately, Astronomus sends down Mama Mite and Termitus to cause trouble. Technically, she only sent down Mama Mite,
Yeah.
which then created Termitus. So Let's just be honest. There's a comment I wrote in our VFTG group chat. Because I watched the episodes like the night before, or depending on when we record, the day of. In this case, we're recording the morning of Christmas Day, 2025, or 2024, I mean. And so I watched the episodes the night before, and I literally sent this message at 9:47 p.m. Watching Grandma Matchmaker for tomorrow's recording, and I'm already at the point where I'm willing to trade Ashley's grandma to Astronema as a sacrifice.
Yeah, and I 100% agreed with you. And I sent a follow-up to that. Basically, I took my notes and went, I screenshotted it, and I was like, these are my thoughts on this episode, which kind of profanity laden, so I'll try and hesitate from that. But
It says, "God damn it, I hate this episode."
yeah, it's everything else is in 13 point. This one is in 20, underlined, bolded, and italicized. That's how the emphasis I wanted to put on this.
Like, here's the thing. First off, let's talk about this is actually probably a problematic episode in and of itself
Yes.
because of the fact that you have this very obnoxious grandmother trying to put into an arranged marriage of her, let's say, 17-year-old granddaughter. First off, I understand that in certain customs and cultures, arranged marriages or arranged marriages are the norm. And for those cultures and customs and how they do it, fine.
Yes.
I ain't gonna touch that because it ain't my business. Your culture, your customs, your business, not mine. I'm not gonna tell you how to do that. But the way this one is done, where she literally just has like all these pictures of dudes going like, "Oh, well, this guy wants to be a doctor, and this guy wants this, and this." It's like literally just trying to do like what kind of like what online dating is, but before online dating, but worse.
Yeah, because now your grandma's trying to set you up with somebody.
And not only that, but it's like you take away the whole dating aspect from everything and actually trying to get to know the person and not trying to wonder if the guy is going to try to murder you in real life. Just because grandma thinks he's great and he's cute looking don't mean
Man,
anything.
I just like okay, before I say anything about the way that this grandma acts, Ashley's grandmother acts, okay?
She thinks she's New York tough and she ain't.
So I wrote something in here about how she looks like she dressed herself in the dark in the dressing room of a PBS kids show, insisting that Ashley find a husband and be engaged by the time she goes back home. So much of this, I was like, hold on, whoa, what's going on here? I literally stopped watching because I've already seen this episode. I know what happens in Grandma Matchmaker. I was like, okay, hold on. So I stopped everything. I went to episode 28 of Dengie Sentai Mega Ranger, right? Which, by the way, called episode 28, Give Up the Explosive Granny Whirlwind, right?
Oh man, is it explosive all right?
Oh my God. Okay. This episode, the more and more I was watching it, I was like, this stinks of having Samuritis, like Power Ranger Samuritis, which I mean, what I mean by that is it feels like they took the script from Dengie Sentai Mega Ranger, they fed it through a translator, they didn't have anybody who knows anything about localization go through it and go, oh, this passes the smell test. And then they literally, like, I put it on my TikTok, like shot for shot in certain instances, they copy the exact same thing, right? Here's the thing. That opening scene, it plays pace by pace the same way in Japan. The Yellow Ranger there, her name is Chisato. Her grandmother comes down from Nagano. She's like, I want you to have a husband by the time I go back up there, right? And here's the thing. You mentioned too about cultural norms. In Japan, it's not this way anymore, you know, at least not whatever. But like in the day, it not uncommon for women to get match made with like successful businessmen in Japan. It was not, it's something that would happen, obviously, for more like public families or people who were of higher social standings and stuff like that. That's just, you know, there's a whole bunch of anime, like Ranma ½, for instance, where like we're setting you up with a husband. You know, it's not uncommon there. It's not an uncommon trope in Japan. This does not work in America. This is not how dating works in the United States of America. This is just not how it works. You cannot come down out of nowhere unannounced, force your granddaughter to look at a bunch of dudes that she doesn't know them from Adam, and then like say, you need to be engaged or before I leave or I'm going to be sad. Right off the gate too, I will say at the very least, this grandmother, here's the thing. She finds out later on that Chisato is Mega Yellow. She realizes that's why she's acting out. There's also a scene where Yellow Ranger in Japan, they're running away, and like she puts her grandmother off to a cop, which by the way, again, beat after beat after beat after beat, they're copying this. They get into an argument where Yellow Ranger's like, "This is all because of you. You on this, I hate you." And she gets slapped by her grandmother, right? Her grandmother, like, angrily that cop, steals the car, sees her morph, and like, "Oh, I gotta help her." And then you find out, "Oh, heard from your mother that like you were having a lot of trouble. So I came down here to try and check on you, and I thought maybe matching you up with a husband would be the best way to do that, but I see that you've been doing this, that, the other, so like I'm gonna back off now," right? That doesn't happen here. They play so much more into this grandma needs to be this nice matchmaker that like they lose the heart of that story entirely. So it not only is a beat for beat, like, you know, copy and paste of the Japanese story, but then like they didn't even bother with the ending. Resembling that, so it just turns into, oh, grandma is this obsessed matchmaker and she just cannot help herself, and it's like a way worse story because of it. Anyways, that's
Yeah.
my 2 cents on
No,
that.
no, no, no. I need to throw this out there too. Ashley, obviously, as you mentioned, tells grandma off. Grandma then assaults a police officer and steals his car. Why is she not in jail by the end of the episode?
I don't know.
If you or I were to do that, we'd be in jail. Just to put that out there.
Oh, absolutely, we'd be in jail. One last thing. Apparently, in Japan, the grandma is like a fifth dan in kendo, which is why she can fight. Here, I don't think this grandma has ever been in a fight a day in her life, but that's just me. So.
She just comes off as like that wannabe New York tough style. Tough when they're really not. Obviously grandma ran over termitus.
Walking home from her house Christmas Eve.
Grandma ran over the monster, not got ran over by the monster.
You can
So
say there's no such thing as Zordon, but as for me and Michael, we believe.
kind of. Anyway, it's funny that we're recording this on Christmas Day slash first night of Hanukkah. And we're making these puns. But yeah, my God, she's just so
Just,
annoying.
oh my God, I would run for the hills if this was my grandma.
That accent is so bad.
Oh.
Now it should be noted, I'm just gonna go off the Ranger Wiki. I don't want to go off my notes because there's a lot of swear words.
Same, same.
A lot of anger.
There's a
So,
lot of four-letter words in my notes, but go on.
oh, I have longer. Ashley's surname is Hammond, and it's stated here on screen with her grandmother being known as Miss Hammond, meaning she is Ashley's father's side of the family. So, good on her father for never wanting to show his face for having to deal with that. Whether that be the mother-in-law or the actual mother, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's his mom.
Probably.
And she did this to him.
Which is why you ne again, like you said, you never see him.
The battle against Mamamite is slightly different from the Sentai counterpart because the Silver Ranger is not introduced yet here in Power Rangers, unlike the Sentai counterpart. So Ashley is included in the battle, unlike her counterpart, who was not in the fight. The scenes of the Quadro Blaster and the Spiral Saber booster mode was also added in for this battle for the Power Rangers adaptation as well. Because of the use of a long, as you mentioned, Sentai sequence involving the Yellow Ranger on the side of a police car, they had to use the car from Japan. This obviously caused issues since Japan drives on the other side of the road from the United States. They had to mirror flip the footage so Ashley's grandmother would be driving on the correct seat and side of the road. This is notable right after she runs down Termitus when the camera zooms in on the license plate. It is also clear to see the Japanese police markings on the car, as well as the color scheme that is famous with the white and black paint scheme.
Yep. The cars, police cars in Japan, or sorry, police cars in the United States never looked like this. I mean, typically back in like the 80s, 90s, what they had like the Crown Vic. And like, yeah, this was never like the Panda car, like this model was, I don't, at least I'm not an expert, but like, I don't think it was ever used in the States.
No, it
This
wasn't.
is,
I don't think so. I think that was a Jap. Like, I see the picture on the Ranger Wiki, and that was 100% a Japanese car.
oh yeah,
Yeah, that
absolutely.
was never used here in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, like them doing this out of order. Like, I don't know. Me personally, I'm pissed that the Silver Ranger's not in this episode because he's one of my favorite sixths. Like Zane, I love Zane. I think he's a great Sixth Ranger. So like, you know, sure they can pick and choose because they're only doing so many episodes. I think they're only doing up to like what 42, 43 or something compared to like 50 for Japan, but like. Totally had the Silver Ranger in it.
But this is also the first time in Power Rangers in Space that a monster is beaten without exploding, as Termitus is frozen with a new blast from the Astro Delta Megazord and then hit with a flying power punch to explode into ice shards. This is the first appearance of Ashley's Battle Blade, and the plot of this episode is similar to Lightspeed Rescue's episode The Fifth Crystal, where the Yellow Ranger must find a way to appease her grandmother. So that is Grandma Matchmaker. For the love of God, let's move on.
Yes, please. I have a whole thing here. You know what? I'm probably just gonna publish this alongside my thoughts here. Once this episode's out, I will remind me. I will absolutely put my notes here because I have thoughts. But we do need to move on. So let's go on to episode 14, The Brilliant Sting. Summary. Good God Almighty, let's just move on from Grandma Matchmaker. Darkonda, evil monster slash scientist, joins the fortress, Dark Fortress crew, much to Eclipse's chagrin. He unleashes an alien insect known as the beryllium bug on the Power Rangers. Carlos is stung by it, and Andros remembers it as a deadly insect that once attacked his homeworld. Cassie also ends up getting stung, this time by Carlos himself, and they both mutate into beryllium monsters. Thus, Ashley has to try to fight off Cassie and Carlos. While this occurs, Andros and TJ head to KO-35 to search for any remaining antidote and cure their buddies before they destroy the megaship. Now, of note, this is the 14th episode of Power Rangers in Space, and it's the beginning of the four-episode story arc that introduces Darkonda, a ruthless bounty hunter. So, this villain is one that Ecliptor has a huge disdain for, even calls him a traitor and a cheat, even getting defensive and protective astronomer when Darkonda mentions her. What, Mike, are your initial thoughts on Darkonda as a character and villain overall?
He a villain. Like, I'm not gonna just go based off first look. I mean, honestly, it's like, I like the fact that it shows that Ecliptor's annoyed by his presence because obviously there's a history, so it's like, okay, cool, we're gonna find out what the history is to this. To these two. I like how he's able to cause chaos amongst the Rangers right away with the beryllium bug, causing it to sting Carlos. And then the way Darkonda meets Astronema leads you to believe that, because of something he said, where it's like, oh, we've met before, it makes you believe that he's probably the one who kidnapped Corone. Because we don't know yet that Astronema's Corone. We don't know that for a little later. And so let's see here. When do we find out? I don't know when we find out when we find out that Astronema is Corone, but like you kind of get the illusion that like there's more to Astronema and Darkonda,
Which I
as a result of that first meeting.
think does a like whole lot of good for like lore building and story building and like setting up that yeah, there's absolutely a past between all these characters. So I that's the kind of thing I think In Space does very well. Which does it forgive Grandma Matchmaker? Kinda. But like I think it does a lot to like because these the villains in this season really multifaceted and like yeah okay like because Ben and I talked about on an episode about how Melody Perkins' acting might not be like the greatest because like she's just chewing the scenery so much whenever she's just like destroy them. It's like we had like Hillary Shepherd, Divatox in Turbo. Doing such a better job, it feels like. Don't get me wrong, Melody Perkins is, you know, she's I like her as Astronema, but like, it's when she's not doing the scenery and she's like contributing to the lore and like the story and like is like doing the stuff that she shines, I think, personally. I think this is where Astronema's character absolutely shines. Carlos is bitten by a beryllium bug, turning into the Japanese tokusatsu version of the fly. We find out that the only cure for Carlos and later also Cassie is on KO-35. We also get kind of an alien vibe with Carlos being up in the rafters and the Rangers being on guard with their phasers set to stun.
Now, this is the episode that I alluded to. The last episode you and I did together, that this gave the alien vibes.
What do you think of all the different sci-fi nods and winks in this episode and season overall?
I mean, I think that's what makes the season because, like, this is supposed to be the last season of Power Rangers ever. And so they just went ham with so many things, like with Star Trek and Battlestar and Star Wars and Alien and Space 1999. So like there's just so many references because of the fact that it's in space that like they can get away with it. And like I said, they were going with the assumption that this was the final season of Power Rangers.
So yeah, for them to do this kind of stuff, I mean, so
And then
many of
the
the
next season we get Space Troopers.
using certain troopers' suits in that show as well.
the fact that you had Firefly, Starship Troopers, and Power Rangers Lost Galaxy all using the same suits was kind of hilarious.
I kind of love it, honestly. I think it's really cool that like because if this is going to be the last season, right? In my mind, like thinking about all the prop makers and all the like, stunt coordinators and everybody working on this show who's out in Hollywood and has already done stuff on multiple different like movies and TV shows, it had to have been so much fun to like be able to pull from like this and that, like, and just go, oh man, like, hold on, let's shoot it like this because it kind of looks like, that one scene in like the first Alien or whatever. And like, there was absolutely a few points in this episode where I was just waiting for someone to scream, like, game over, man. Or, like, it was just so much fun, I thought. Moving on from that, though. Okay, so assuming that we haven't watched the other episodes yet, I'm asking this question just from what we know so far. Barkonda, after being called useless, gives Astronema intel that Andros is the only true Space Ranger, and that if he were separated from his teammates, he would truly fall apart. Astronema then listens to Darkonda's plan as they walk off screen. What do you think that plan will entail fully?
I think part of it was the whole beryllium bug thing, to try to get, okay, they infected Carlos, and then we obviously saw Carlos infect Cassie. The idea was to infect all of them.
Right.
But I also think, like, also moving down the road, it's like they're always going to try to isolate Andros. Like, that's
Right.
just the key thing. Just isolate Andros, because he'd already been the lone wolf for so long. You try to plant those seeds to make him going back to being a lone wolf, because then you can easily go after him.
Which I think is a pretty, like, it's going to be an effective thing if they can utilize it in future episodes to try and, like, get them off their plan, get them off their goal of finding Zordon and beating Dark Specter and all this, like, because already, like, these Rangers are kind of at a disadvantage because they don't have a real, like, they have a home base, but, like, it's one that constantly has to keep moving because it's being tracked, and, like, it's at risk of, like, falling apart, and, like, four out of the five of these Rangers are kind of out of their element because they've never been to space before, and, like, I think it's a smart plan to, like, focus in on, like, the one dude that can actually keep things moving together, because if they he, you take him out, or you sow enough discontent and, like, discord with him that he's not trusting the Rangers, then ultimately their plan fails. So I think it's smart. One other question that's, like, way less more detailed. For a planet that is supposed to have been decimated by war, 35 sure seems to have a pretty well-stocked and clean abandoned hospital, don't they?
Yeah, maybe they actually follow the laws of war, or the rules of war. You don't touch hospitals.
Fair enough. That is absolutely, like, I believe that's in the Geneva Convention. It's like, you do not touch hospitals.
I mean, unless you turn it into a military target yourself, like if you're storing weapons in there, then yeah, it becomes a military target. That's the exception. But yeah, if it's clearly that they don't have any weapons in there, it's not a military target, so you don't touch it.
You don't touch it. You do not touch it. That is a big no-no. I don't have anything else necessarily here to question you about, but do you have any other thoughts about this episode before we wrap up for the day?
Nope.
Okay.
I thought definitely thought this was one of the better episodes. It was interesting. It put them into a tough spot. Obviously, this was the introduction of Darkonda, and this was an episode that they did not use the Delta Megazord since it was introduced.
Yeah.
So.
And as for the Sentai, there's really no story to compare this to at all.
It just says that the fight footage was used from episode 19, Drive It In, the Invincible Deadly Punch.
So I got no notes here. So, well, I don't have anything else to. So, Mike, where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can find the show on social media at VFTG underscore PR. Just click on the link tree. It'll take you to wherever you can listen to the show. Obviously, go for me, everything's under at the Lindabomb75 on social media. I've kind of moved everything that way. And then obviously the website is txhthockey.com. Visit all the work that I do on there as well.
Fantastic.
Bri.
You can find me on TikTok, at least for now, under Blue Ranger B underscore RYE. You can also find me on Twitter at One Drunk Geek. And when I am not doing the Power Rangers show with you, Ben, and Sasha, you can find me over at Castaway Studios with my longtime friends Sean and Colin, doing the Two Fat Guys Eat episodes, where we talk about yummy nom noms.
And
That
I should
needs.
throw this out there because you mentioned doing another thing, and I don't promote it because I know that this is probably going to be coming out like after hockey season or near the tail end of hockey season. But I
Sure.
am doing a hockey show called The More Phenomenal Hockey Show with Toru Masamune, who played Shredder in the 2014 Michael Bay's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Awesome.
And I also do it with Jeff Parazzo, who was Trent, the Dino White Thunder Ranger in
Yo.
Dino Thunder. And we just talk hockey, and my guest hosts are usually from the Power Rangers or Turtles franchises.
Check that out. Absolutely.
Time of this recording, I've already recorded 4 episodes. Toro and I are planning our next episode and a potential Twitch watch along. So, but that's at the time of this recording, that's relevant to us. But at the time of the release of this episode, it may not be relevant to anyone at all.
Mike, you're talking about hockey with the shredder. What the hell is your life?
Pretty cool.
We must crush these
Well,
penguins.
it's funny because like Jeff, who played, was the White Ranger in Dino Thunder, he's a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. He lives and is from Toronto. Toru, was always lived in always in a hockey market. His more formal years were in Edmonton, so he's an Edmonton Oilers fan.
Oh, wow.
He plays beer league hockey, and so there's a very special, unique dynamic there that we're able to talk about hockey because we're all hockey fans. We may have a Power Ranger-esque name to our show, but it has nothing to do with that. It has more with what we're interested in. And there's a hopeful plan for 2026 with it,
Nice.
but we'll see where that takes us.
Sweet. All right. Well, awesome. Go check that out.
Yeah, check out the archive because the season's probably over by
Yeah.
the time this episode goes out.
But that being said, thank you, Mike, once again for joining me here. Thank you all for tuning in for yet another episode of Voices from the Grid. And I will leave you just saying, until our next more phenomenal episode, grab your Astromorphers. 335.
And may the power protect you.
Let's rock it.